Funding for this podcast comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink software, accelerating the pace of engineering and science. Learn more at MathWorks.com.
Special funding for the podcast of On Point is provided by Boston University School of Law, dedicated to excellence in teaching and to preparing our graduates to hit the ground running.
Major funding for On Point is provided by Liberty Mutual for all your auto, home, life, and business insurance needs. Liberty Mutual. Responsibility. What's your policy?
From WBUR Boston, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. Last week, Al and Tipper Gore announced they were splitting up after 40 years of what seemed to be a rock-solid marriage. Their announcement has become a kind of cultural moment of reflection for America's marrieds, and especially long-term marrieds. Baby boomers are living longer with more options than any generation before. So what lasts here in marriage? What's important? What's not? And if the Gore's marriage wasn't safe, is any marriage safe? Is there such a thing? This hour on Point, long-term marriage and gray divorce. There was Alan Tipper's famous kiss. It was the 2000 Democratic National Convention in Los Angeles. Nominee Al Gore, who was looking to succeed Bill Clinton, who had had such famous marital problems, gave his wife Tipper a famously long and passionate kiss at the podium. Came to symbolize in the popular imagination the surprising strength of this political marriage relationship in politics. Here's the atmosphere and audience reaction around them as they kissed at the convention. That was then. This is now. In their email to friends, this is very much a mutual and mutually supportive decision that we've made together following a process of long and careful consideration, they wrote last week. We ask for respect to our privacy and that of our family, and we do not intend to comment further. They are splitting up, and it's caused a lot of head-scratching and raised questions all around the country. In individual families and relationships, we're going to hear a little later from the Washington Post's Sally Quinn, who knows the Gores well. But joining me first today from New York is Ilana Katz, a family therapist and senior faculty member at the Ackerman Institute for the Family. She directs the Family and Divorce Mediation Program. Ilana Katz, thank you very much for being here.
How are you, Tom? It's nice to be with you.
Great to have you. And with us from Makaha, Hawaii, is Stephanie Kuntz, professor of history and family studies at Evergreen State College. Her most recent book is Marriage, a History. She's working on a new one about women and marriage in the mid-20th century. She's in Hawaii, and we're not. Stephanie Kuntz, welcome back. Thanks for being here.
Well, don't hate me.
We won't hate you. Give us your first thoughts on this news of the breakup of the Gores. People sort of, you know, heard it and then listened again. And I've heard so many people talking about it over the last week. What do you make of this, Stephanie?
Well, I've been kind of surprised by what a tremendous emotional output, there is outpouring of a concern there's been. I guess it's because, you know, we look at something that's lasted 40 years and they really were there for each other during the difficult parts of that marriage, when she had depression, when they almost lost a child, going through all sorts of things together.
Not to mention his political setbacks along the way, and then Nobel Prize and all the rest.
Yes, they've had triumphs, they've had setbacks, they've had personal difficulties. And so I understand why people think, oh, my gosh, if they can't make it, can we? But it seems to me that there's two separate lessons we want to take from this. One is the we really cannot take our marriages for granted. You have to keep growing together or you will grow apart. But the other is, I think, a more reassuring message, that they did get through these tough times together, and now they're telling us that they're going to part in a civil manner. So I think we can be regretful for their sake, but also pleased that they are able to do it this way.
Well, it's hard not to, I suppose, celebrate 40 years of what looked like a good relationship, but, you know, Ellen McCarthy in the Washington Post famously wrote right in her headline, "Please, Alan Tipper, don't do this. For our sakes, don't." She said, "It doesn't just make us sad, it makes us scared. It means that maybe marriage isn't something we can conquer, that you can have all the necessary ingredients, romance, good morals, mutual respect, healthy family, and still see this precious thing built over decades crumble in the end." Ilana Katz, are you looking at the, you know, upside or downside here? Yes, they had 40 years, but then it all falls apart?
Well, that's certainly how it looks on the outside. And certainly I look at the upside of them taking care with how they're going about this process. They are not sensationalizing it. They are putting safe boundaries around it. And I commend them tremendously for that. I would also say that people live a long time these days, and we do expect a lot from our partners. And sometimes a marriage that works really well in some chapters of life does not always go, you know, till death do us part. So I think that it is a wake-up call, and it is an invitation to anyone who wants to protect a relationship to say that just like everything else we do in life takes work and attention, a relationship does as well.
The Gores were married when they were 20 and 21 in 1970, so it's 40 years in 2010, and now they're finished. But, of course, Stephanie, with longevity these days, you know, they've easily got, just by the statistical charts, a quarter century apiece or more in front of them. Do you think, and we hear therapists saying they see more boomers getting late-life divorces. Is that longevity part of the reason? Does till death do us part seem like just too much?
Well, I don't think it's the reason that the marriage goes bad. Some people, or goes off track. Many people do maintain their love and even their passion, certainly their love feelings for 40, 50, 60 years. But I think what's happened today, staying together till death do us part, is a much bigger challenge than it used to be if there is something unsatisfying in the marriage. One of the women I interviewed for my research on this, women in the 20th century, mm-hmm. said to me, you know, we used to think that you're fat at 40 and finished at 50. Mm-hmm. And seriously, there were so few options for people in 50 and 60 over, you know, I mean, Gore's age, 61, 62. Today, they've got 25, 30 years of active, productive life going for them. They also have more possibility to reinvent themselves in terms of jobs, projects, whatever. They may have been moving in different directions with his environmental work and her not doing the same kind of activities. They also have more chance to repartner. People are actually have more chance to remarry or to get a satisfying relationship after 55 than ever before in history. So all these things, they don't make the marriage go wrong. But if the marriage go wrong, they make it seem less bearable to stay in it for that next 25 or 30 years.
Wow. People really care about this because I think a lot of people feel like they're investing in a marriage. And you invest, you know, you pass that certain, that first 7-year itch or 10 by whatever, where half of marriages go bad. You'd like to feel like you're getting on some kind of safer track. I think that's part of what unsettles people when they hear the Gore news. Let's begin to get some callers here. Sarah in Belmont, Massachusetts. Sarah, you're on the air.
Hi. I just thought this is a frightful waste of time, what you're discussing.
Really?
And yes, and I've heard some of the experts. I think they're talking complete nonsense.
But people's relationships are pretty important.
No, but I think when a man and a woman who are like around 60 years old are getting divorced after 40 years, I think there's only one answer. It's sex. Because women at that age, you know, are not really that much that sexual, and men really are. And so that's what it's about. And I think it's absurd to beat about the bush and talk about, I don't know, a million different things which have
It's just about relevance. Sex. The man's going to want more than the woman, so that may break up the marriage. Sarah, let us look at it. Ilana, what do you say to that observation?
I would respectfully disagree. I think people are maintaining active sexual relationships throughout the lifespan. And many women come into their own sexually later than we sometimes expected. So I would say that there isn't just one story here about sexual partnerships. In fact, sometimes couples find they hit a better rhythm as they get older. You know, a man who might have been more impulsive and move more quickly sexually in his younger years slows down a bit, and they can develop a different kind of sexual relationship.
We certainly have the cultural stereotype of the older guy going for the young trophy wife, which seems to have a sexual meaning all over it. Is that not an accurate reflection of what in this case, there's no news of that, but that's certainly out there as a strong stereotype, Ilana.
Right, but there's also another, you know, there's also relationships developing now. There was a whole television show about the older woman with the younger man, and I think that many couples who do end a relationship and repartner look for a peer, not necessarily someone younger. That's one kind of relationship mm-hmm. that someone may enjoy at an earlier time where there's a hierarchy in the marriage. And I've certainly seen that happen where over time, the feminist movement, a woman changes, she wants something more equal. If the man doesn't, he may go out and try to replace the relationship that he had at an earlier time in life. But that's certainly not everyone's story.
Stephanie Kuntz, you hear our caller's presumption here. A lot of minds will go there right away, though. That's not the news, as far as we know, with Alan Tipper.
No, and as a matter of fact, it's not what we know in terms of surveys and statistics about divorces. You know, two-thirds of divorces are initiated by women, and this isn't just a legal fiction with the men being chivalrous. When we ask divorced men and women separately, you know, who wanted the divorce more, the men as well as the women tell us that it was more often the woman than the man. And in these late-life divorces, there's a very interesting pattern. Two-thirds of them are also initiated by women, and when the man initiates it, it often is because he has a new partner on the horizon. But when the woman initiates it, it's more often that she's just tired. Not necessarily tired of sex, but tired of this particular man. Whether it's something bad in the relationship or whether she's been dropping hints for years to change something. One woman I interviewed said, you know, I looked at that dirty pair of underpants on the floor and I said, I'm not going to do this anymore.
Pick it up one more time. she's out of there. Stephanie Kuntz, please stand by in Hawaii. And Ilana Katz in New York City, it's great to have you both with us. We're looking at boomers and long-term marriages like Alan Tipper Gore calling it quits, getting divorced, and asking, what is that all about? I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We've been joined from Makaha, Hawaii, by Stephanie Kuntz, professor of history and family studies at Evergreen State College, and from New York City by Ilana Katz. She's a therapist and faculty member senior at the Ackerman Institute for the Family. We're going to hear in just a moment from Sally Quinn in Washington. She's seen a lot of marriages and known the Gores for a long time, but let's listen first to Al and Tipper. This was 2002 interview with Larry King, the Gores talking about their marriage. With Al at her side, Tipper talks here about how they made it through. You'll hear Larry King reference the 1989 accident of their son Albert, who was hit by a car and narrowly survived.
We fell in love and we've stayed in love and we've worked very hard when there were hard times to work it out, and not that we ever thought about divorcing or anything like that. I don't mean to imply that, but I mean that I think people need to
toughest,
work it out.
Was it toughest when you nearly lost your boy?
That was real tough.
That was very tough.
It was real tough, yeah.
But my point is that I think a lot of people sort of, you know, cut and run when the first problems come up, and I think the message ought to be that you need to know that you can work it out. You can get counseling, you can work it out.
Al and Tipper Gore with Larry King in 2002, last week, not long after their 40th anniversary, they let friends and ultimately the country know they were calling it quits. Longtime friend of the Gore, Sally Quinn, joins us right now from Washington. She's a columnist for the Washington Post, co-moderates the On Faith site. Sally, thanks very much for being with us.
Thank you, Tom. I'm glad to be here.
A lot of people are wondering, who may know the Gores and may not, may share their politics and may not. What happened here? What do you know, Sally?
Well, I have to say I have been talking to my friends who were friends of theirs for the last week, and nobody knows anything. But what I can say is, you know, people's first reaction was shock and then sadness. I don't mm-hmm. know anybody who didn't say, isn't this sad? And I have a very different view of this. I mean, I've known them for a long time, almost as long as they've been married, and they were really in love. There's no question about that. But they grew apart, particularly after the election.
The 2000 run for president?
Yeah, when he won the election but lost the presidency.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
My feeling is that this is not a bad thing. You know, I look at it as something that's sort of optimistic and hopeful. Yeah, these two people were 20 and 21 when they got married. And you look at the marriage age now, most people, I mean, the median age is sort of 27 for women and 28 for men or something. People aren't getting married so young anymore. You don't even know who you are when you're 20 and 21. The fact that they have made it for 40 years, I find miraculous, given what they have been through and the kind of traumas they've been through.
But we didn't think they were clinging onto this by their fingernails for 40 years, Sally. We had the impression that it was a good relationship.
Yeah, I think it was. There's no question that they were madly in love with each other, and I saw them a lot at one point, and they were a great couple. But after the election, they went their separate ways. I mean, Al traveled all the time. Tipper was, you know, and by that time, too, the kids were out of the house.
Four kids, three grandchildren.
That kept them together. Her identity was so attached to his. And then suddenly, because they were a team, when you're a political family, you're a team. And everything you do together for that political position. Suddenly, they weren't that team anymore. He went off and did his environmental thing. I mean, obviously she cared about it, but that wasn't her thing. She wasn't passionate. He got into money making and the internet and all these sort of big companies and tech companies in California. That wasn't her thing. She had grandchildren. She wanted to spend more time with the children. She didn't travel with him that much. He was gone all the time, and they drifted apart. And so why not? I mean, my feeling is, as you all have been saying, you know, they could have 40 more years left, and why spend it with somebody that you don't have anything in common with? If your interests diverge, then it's time to take advantage of that. I mean, Tipper has always been in his shadow. She's never been a person in her own right because she's always been Al Gore's wife, the helpmate.
Yeah.
And now,
I mean, she stood up on her own. She burned the CDs years ago and all that.
Yeah, I know, but that was 25 years ago. I mean, right now she has an opportunity to be Tipper Gore, her own person, and have her own life and her own and a relationship that works for her.
But Sally, does that mean that the whole, you know, till death do us part thing in this age of super longevity is just becoming a kind of fairy tale? Is it?
I think till death do us part in this day and age is really unreal. I mean, it's unrealistic. I mean, 50% of marriages end in divorce. So I don't think people should actually be required to say till death do us part because it's a lie most of the time. I mean, what you hope is that when you get married, you're making a commitment to that person, to the person you love. But 40 years later, it's a totally different person. And you may have grown together or you may have grown apart, but the person you promised to stay with is not necessarily the person you're with 40 years later. So it seems to me that the best thing to do is to get out of it and move on with your life. It doesn't mean that either person is bad or wrong or anything else. It just means that you're two different people who've gone in separate ways, and you both have, I keep thinking of that Sally Field ad, you know, for Boniva, I have this one body and this one life.
This one life.
And you think, why be in a relationship that's dead? It doesn't make any sense to me.
Wow. Sally, stand by if you would. I want to bring Ilana Katz and Stephanie Kuntzen here. I mean, Ilana, you talk with couples all the time. You know, you hear what Sally's saying. Life is long. Relationship may not last it. And that's not necessarily a bad thing. Is till death do us part, like, sort of over as a goal? Is it not? Does it not have its own weight and merit as a goal?
Well, one thing I would say is that I think a marriage can't stand idly by. You know, we expect to work at work. We expect to even maintain our cars and our homes.
Right.
And we can't afford to think that just because the marriage has been there for a long time, it will be there for a long time. We know a lot more than we used to as therapists about how people can either fall away from each other or miss a tune and get into very problematic cycles that are just terribly frustrating and repetitive.
But is there an ideal scenario where people stay in one relationship for the long term, you know, take it right to the very end, unto death, and realize something of unique value because of that? Or is that a...
I think that it absolutely can be done, but it has to be done with continued focus, attention, giving it priority at times. You can't always prioritize it, but you certainly have to prioritize it some of the time. So if it's important, then it's going to need that continued nurturing and cultivation, and that if it lasts a long time, it may actually not be the same relationship you started in.
Right.
If you follow me.
Sure. Stephanie, are you, cavalier is the wrong word, I'm sure, Sally, but here's a kind of a new attitude toward death do us part. I mean, are you open-minded about whether or not that's the goal?
Well, I'm open-minded about people making these kinds of decisions because we don't know what goes on in their relationship, you know, and I think it's important that we that we respect their decision and celebrate their, or at least value their ability to, if they do it well, instead of having things end in this big blow-up, a tawdry affair, bothering a child out of wedlock or whatever.
Right.
However, I'm more optimistic, I think, about the possibility of staying together till death do us part if that relationship is a good one and you can keep it so. And I think that is possible to do. Actually, the divorce rate has been going down steadily for the past 15 or 20 years. And I think that more people are making their marriages last. But I'd like to kind of make a little distinction between, we always talk about working at your marriage. To me, that sounds sort of like, oh, gosh, awful hard work. I think that the real important thing that makes a marriage last is that you're either working together for something else that you jointly believe in, and that's what Sally was talking about.
The Gores, their political life for a long time.
And then stop doing it. And then if you're not doing that, that you're playing together. One of the best predictors of, you know, kind of renewing love and affection is doing novel things together, whether, you know, you're out hiking, you're, you know, challenging yourself, you've never gone whitewater rafting before. I think we underestimate the importance of play in marriage, and that's a very, people who can play together are going to last.
Sounds like maybe the Gores weren't. Sally, you've seen a lot of relationships over a long time. I mean, are you saying it's sort of all the same to them, to you, whether or not they last, or some, if they're not going to, let it go and never mind, don't worry?
I have friends who have been in 40-year marriages who I think have absolutely great marriages. I think they respect each other, first of all. And they have a good time together, and they have a lot of the same interests. I also have a lot of friends who are in dead marriages, and who have no relationship with each other at all, but they're staying in the marriages because they're sort of locked in, but they're living, as they say, lives of quiet desperation. And I'm looking at them. I mean, I'm just thinking of one friend I talked to the other day who is just desperately unhappy in a 35-year marriage, and saying, you know, you've only got one life. Why are you doing this? And he says, there's no real answer. And I don't understand that. I don't think that because you get married 30 years ago or 40 years ago, that you have an obligation to live a life of misery, because if you're miserable, then the other person is too.
But so what about it as a goal? Is it a worthy goal to hear my selling? People don't want to die alone. They want to have an ever-deepening relationship with somebody.
Yeah,
at least that's the storybook.
The goal would be, you know, the ideal would be you would marry somebody, you'd fall madly in love with them, and then you would continue to grow together and continue to fall in love again and again, and that certainly happens, and again. And you would, you know, one of the things that I find in my marriage is that we keep doing new things all the time.
To Ben Bradley at the Washington Post, yeah.
Yeah, and do we have a perfect marriage? No, but he's about to be 89 years old, and we have new friends. A lot of our friends are in their 40s now. We see all the time, and we do trips and we plan things together, and there's always something interesting going on where we have, and you know, we both are journalists, we're both at the Washington Post, so I mean those mutual interests. But I see so many friends whose marriages, you know, where the husband or the wife is not interested in what the other person is doing, has completely sort of tuned out, they take each other for granted, and they just sort of live in a life of they're not fulfilled. And as I said, I want my life to be fulfilling, and I don't see that anyone has an obligation to stay in a relationship simply because they said they would 40 years ago.
Let's bring our listeners in here, if I may. Sally Quinn, Ilana Katz, Stephanie Kuhn, stand by. Clarice in Williamsport, Tennessee. Clarice, you're on the air. What do you think?
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
What I think is this. I've been married that's an easy endeavor. And have we ever perpetrated the fairy tale that live happily ever after is the expectation for every marriage is beyond me. As I said, marriage is work, but it's fun working, and it continues to be fun.
Clarice, I'm afraid we're losing your line, but I can see you're 35 years together. Marriage is work, and I think the idea was also here, Ilana, that if people divorce later in life, their marriage probably went sour a long time ago. Do you buy that, Ilana, as a pattern?
Well, one thing I would say is that I don't think people take the decision casually. Most people that I sit with, if I'm mediating a divorce, have really thought about it. Sometimes one has had quiet worries longer than the other, but no one, the myth that somebody's doing this impulsively is most of the time a myth, I think. So people do take it seriously. Sometimes there's a sense that they've not been a good fit for a long time and other things have taken a front burner. And sometimes they've just hit a turn in the road where they just don't fit anymore.
Let's go to Jim in Brattleboro, Vermont. Jim, you're on the air.
Yeah, hey, Jim. I'm sorry. The idea is that I think a lot of this after 21 years of marriage, it's the children, if there's children involved, and I think there should be special effort put into it. But I think, women tend to become grudging and men become frumpy. And I think people have got to work on it. You know, you look in Europe and everybody looks, even at their later stages, they maintain it. You know, maintenance is hard at an older time. So I just think people need in America to wake up and look good.
Jim, you got divorced after 21 years, I guess. Was it your choice or your wife's or mutual?
No, she wanted out. And I think people in general, you know, it's two salary family nowadays. So I think it was a lot to do with finance.
And do you think it was the right thing?
Oh, no, because I still have the ramifications of one of my children, giving me a hard time because I didn't chase after her. You know, to me, it was a done deal. Once that happens, you can't relive it. There's resurrections and then there's resurrections.
Yeah, and not in this case. Jim, thanks for your call. One more from Joe in Nashville. Joe, you're on the air.
Hello.
Hi.
I just wanted to call on a positive note. We've been married almost 50 years.
Congratulations.
And I'll tell you, it can be done. I think that something that I haven't heard from a lot of the other callers that you've talked to is the word commitment. You know, every person, I don't care who they are, has ups and downs in their lives. Every marriage has ups and downs. But you have to go through these together. You can't, I think it was Sally that was saying it's they're unsatisfied or they have many options or they reinvent themselves. Well, no. Wait, if you take out, it's not a lie when you say, till death do I die.
We part.
Till death do us part. I mean, that's not a lie. We took that vow when we got married, and we mean it every day. We've been through a lot of hardships with grandchild dying and deaths in the family and so on. But that's where you get your strength. If you really love someone and really make a commitment, you have to have faith in God, too. That's what gets you through these things, not selfishness. This sounds, I'm sorry, but so many of these talks, that's all I can think of is self-centeredness and selfishness.
Joe, I appreciate your call. It's a short time before the break. Sally Quinn, what about commitment as its own reward, as its own fulfillment?
Well, I think it's I think that it's wonderful that she has had a very happy 50-year marriage. But she, you can't judge somebody. You know, she's not walking in other people's shoes. If you're with somebody and you're miserable with that person, then marriage is a two-way street. And if one partner doesn't pull his or her own weight, then the commitment is broken to begin with. There is no commitment. You've got to have it on both sides. And I think you commit yourself to something when you're younger. You may well not have the same commitment as you get older.
Let's get a call right here from Katya in Brookline, Massachusetts. Katya, you're on the air.
Hi, Hi. I am 23 years old,
okay.
And my parents were married for about, well, technically they're still married now. They were married for about 25 years, and they're in the process of getting divorced.
Okay.
And I was just hoping to hear some of your panelists' opinion mm-hmm. on being an older child of divorced parents, because, you know, I have a very different relationship with my parents than I would have if I were 7 years old or, you know, 5 years old, where they would want to protect me and hide,
right.
you know, sort of what's happening from me.
Do you wish they did, or are you glad to know the details, or how do you look at it, Katya?
I'm very ambivalent about it because, on the one hand, personally, I'm a very big believer in honesty. I hate having things hidden from me. I don't think that people in general should hide things from other people. On the other hand, I just found out that my dad had just got a new girlfriend, and it's very difficult for me to think, you know, do I want to know that about him?
Right.
Do I wish that he hadn't told me until it were more serious?
And what's the message for you when you think about marriage and your parents splitting up after 25 years? What does it tell you about your expectations, maybe?
Well, you know, it's really hard because everyone has told me, you know, my parents have many siblings, and they've all said that my parents' relationship when they first got together, and really for the first 20 years or so of their
yeah.
marriage, they were perfect. They were everyone wanted to be my parents because they were always so happy and lively and excited to be with each other. And so it's really hard to see that this can happen. You know, you can be with someone for 20 years, be totally in love, and then it can just, you know, something can happen. And who knows what happened with my parents. We had a really
yeah.
difficult time where all of the grandparents died within 6 months of each other.
Mm-hmm.
And that was, you know,
wow.
a big strain on everyone.
Yeah.
So it's understandable that changes things. But it's really hard to know, and it's scary for me personally.
Do you hope for a lifetime marriage yourself? Do you think that's a reasonable hope?
Honestly, I have no idea. Obviously, I would hope for that. I would hope to be able to love someone for my whole life. But I, you know, watching this happen and reading articles about other couples that have divorced in light of
yeah.
Alan Tipper's divorce, you know, it seems less and less likely to happen. And I think what's better is not to look at it as a failure, but if really you can get 25, 30, or 40 years of a happy marriage with someone, I don't see why that's necessarily a failure, even if it's a really scary prospect.
Katya, I wish good luck to your whole family in the whatever form it's taking here. Thanks for calling. Stephanie, what about it? I mean, what about young people looking at their own parents, at Alan Tipper Gore, and thinking about what their expectations should be going into marriage? I mean, there's something quite thrilling about saying the words, "Till death do us part." You know, is it time to jettison that?
No, I don't think it is. But remember, when we talk about commitment, I've been listening, and I'm kind of taking a middle-of-the-road position
mm-hmm.
here between the people who talk about commitment and the ones who talk about fulfillment. Commitment to what? You're committed to the institution of marriage, no matter how bad the relationship is.
We're past that, aren't we? Yeah.
Or are you committed to the relationship and the obligations? And I think that you have to have a balance between meeting your obligations and also making sure that you are fulfilled. And sometimes it will go one way where you are sacrificing if you've got an ill spouse or something, and some way when you're in better shape, it may go the other direction. But if you're 23, we know that you have a really good shot at a good marriage and a long-lasting marriage. Divorce rates have been going down. For every year a
mm-hmm.
woman delays marriage after age, you know, well, going up to age 30, her chances of divorce fall. College-educated couples, their divorce rates have been falling very sharply in the last 15, 20 years. Egalitarian couples that share. It used to be that male breadwinner marriages were the most stable, but today it's ones where there's some kind of sharing of nurturing and breadwinning. Whether it's on one side, whether the male or the female, that's a,
mm-hmm.
a mark of instability.
That's pretty
so there's
common.
Lots of things.
Mm-hmm. Sally, what are you thinking as you listen to Katya there, who's wrestling, watching her own parents divorce? I mean, what should 20-somethings be thinking about marriage, given?
Well, I think one of the reasons that the divorce rate is going down is because people are waiting longer to get married.
Plus, boomers were the most divorce-prone generation ever.
Yeah, and so, you know, I mean, my son is 28, and
mm-hmm.
he's getting married, and his fiancée is 33, you know, they will have known each other for 2 years, and a lot of his friends are now just beginning to get married in their you know, late 20s, early 30s. And I think that those marriages have a much better shot. I was 37 before I got married for the first time.
Yeah.
My father and mother were hysterical.
What's
I
up?
I was an old maid.
Right.
But my husband had been married twice before, and mm-hmm. he'd been in marriages that were happy in the beginning and then just didn't work after a while. And everyone, the two marriages he had, they separated and both went on to, you know, have other lives. And
yeah.
they were never rancorous or mm-hmm. you know, unhappy divorces.
All kinds of models out there.
No. So he was 57 when
yeah.
we got married.
Yeah, yeah.
It seems to me that by the time I was 37, I had had a life. I'd established myself with a career and all that. I think that it's a real challenge for. And a lot of my friends were married, you know, high school sweethearts.
Yeah.
And I think that's where. You know, the problems began because I know myself that even though we will have been together 37 years this month, I'm a totally different person from the person I was when we got together. Totally mm-hmm. different person.
Yeah, and yet it's possible.
And
I'm a high school sweetheart, partnership myself, and we've both grown a lot, but it's still great.
Yeah, well, I mean, that's great, and that's lucky, but what I'm saying is that it's not realistic to think
mm-hmm.
that when you marry somebody that if we look at the divorce rate, we'll see
yeah.
that marriage is going to last, and it's not real, and it's not necessarily a bad thing that it doesn't
mm-hmm.
last. I mean, you know, if you are religious and you feel that marriage, I mean, think in the old days when we didn't have divorce, I bet you'd have today, if you were not allowed to get divorced, you'd have very few marriages.
Wouldn't even do it. I want to get a call from Nashville. Marie is on the line. Marie, thanks for joining us.
Yes.
Hi, tell us your story, Marie.
I am totally depressed. We've been married 48 years. I married the day after my 20th birthday. I had a job working and all that. My husband, he was 22. Day
mm-hmm.
after his, 2 days after his birthday. His birthday is one day. My birthday is the next. My anniversary is the next. He takes care of his mother, who is elderly, still living by herself.
Mm-hmm.
But she's got all kind of problems, and he's constantly doing things with her, doing things for her. And whatever, everything's been dumped on him. So I have tried to maintain my whatever livelihood, but I want to travel. I want to go places. I want to do things. He doesn't want to do anything with me. He does everything for her, and I'm kind of like this set aside.
Where's your husband right now, Marie?
He's in the garden.
And you're in the house wishing you weren't married.
You know, does he know how you feel?
I have mentioned divorce to him sometimes, but he just blows me away.
Wow.
It's like he doesn't realize the seriousness of this. I want to travel. I want to do things before I die. And you know what? Death may not be that unpleasant because I've turned 68. He has turned 70, and I am so unhappy. I am so depressed.
Wow, Marie, we hope you find
you
a way.
Can you take a trip on your own?
Yeah, how about to buy a ticket? You know, get out of town.
Sign up for a cruise or a tour or a trip or something.
You know, it's kind of like I want to go to the beach. I love going to the beach. And I thought if I could get in my car and just go someplace, then what would I do when I get there? I don't even know where to go hardly other than with him.
Marie, AARP, sign up. They got all kinds of tours, and you can get on a ship or a bus or a plane and travel the country. You can decide whether to come with you or not. It's up to him, or he can stay in the garden with his mom.
Well, it's so sad. It's been going on for years.
Oh,
and he's in denial.
Well,
he really is. And we're big church workers. We are very involved in church. And to me, it's just, I think that's his outlook in life. Like, that is his passion. Our marriage is no passion left anymore. And I can understand Al Gore and Tipper divorcing, because if you reach a certain point, if you don't do something, then you get so bitter at each other. You get so angry. And all the possibilities and all the could-have-beens and should-have-beens, mm-hmm. and your memories are fading of the happy days. Right now, it's so sad. I mean, it's just like, I don't know. I can't talk to anyone about this.
Marie, you are smart and alive. Get yourself a ticket and get out on the road. You get some perspective on
it,
and so will he.
Church group. Yeah, get a group
absolutely.
Of people from your church and say, we're going to go on a trip.
Get on the road. Marie, thank you very much for calling. Sally, I guess there's Exhibit A, kind of speaking to your point. Marie's not happy, and why should she be that unhappy?
Well, she shouldn't. Mm-hmm. Clearly, you know, when you've been married that long, she clearly is scared of being alone.
Mm-hmm.
And that's really sad. Happily, she has a church group, and it seems to me that that would be the way to go, is to sort of get together with some people in the church and get the support from them and try to start, you know, moving in another direction.
Ilana Katz,
there's a perfect example why people shouldn't stay together if they're not happy.
Ilana, do you find a lot of long marrieds who maybe sort of feel stuck or paralyzed, who maybe should do something?
Well, you know, I think everyone has a wish that they would come first at some point in the relationship, and that's the pain that I hear mm-hmm. in Marie's voice. She really wants to know that there's a time where her husband could make her come first. And I do think sometimes it's hard to think about, even if she doesn't want to be out of her marriage, you know, we're coming up with ideas that would have her be a different kind of woman at this point than she envisions herself to be. And that can take, that's a process, to think of herself as perhaps even if she wants to stay married, to think of herself as someone who's married but can also do something individually.
Mm-hmm. And be empowered with that and find some joy with that,
right.
Maybe.
It's a leap.
It's
yeah.
a leap. Marie, good luck with that. Edith in Lowell, Massachusetts. Edith, you're on the air.
Hi.
Hi.
My name is Edith from Lowell, Massachusetts, and my husband and I celebrated our 40th anniversary on May 1st.
Congratulations.
In the public gardens where we met 43 years ago. Our marriage was the marriage that nobody said would work, because my husband's of a different faith
mm-hmm.
from myself. He's a vegetarian. I'm not. But I have to say, down through the years, the things that were most important to us, which was family, good health, educating our children in all aspects that we could of diversity and life, that as we got close to our 40th anniversary,
yeah.
I wanted to renew the vows. And with our children, we renewed our vows. My husband is a Hindu. I'm an Episcopalian.
All right.
And we incorporated both of our backgrounds in a very short, small ceremony. And what I was most touched about, we were able to be do our vows in front of the same priest who had married us 40 years ago.
That's amazing. But what's your secret, Edith? Why are you still, after 40 years in this marriage, so, you know, up on it? What's made it good?
Well, I think what I've heard from you is the death do us part piece. And I think that's because that's all we have. But in marrying my husband in both faiths, in his faith, we took 7 steps in marriage.
Mm-hmm.
One for food and life, one for strength and life, one for wealth and prosperity, one for love and affection, one for beauty, one for an opportune time, but the most important, for everlasting friendship. Mm. So if your spouse is also your best friend, then you walk through life together. For us, our secret, a crazy sense of humor. And that has sustained us through the most difficult times. But now we reap the joys of children who have grown up, of grandchildren, and still we have parents living, My dad's 96. His mom's 88.
Yeah, lucky for
and
you.
And I think whatever we learned as children is what we brought to our marriage.
Edith, that's a wonderful story in itself. Gosh, they're all over the map, but very interesting in every part of the rainbow here. And congratulations to you. I mean, Stephanie, here, I'm wondering what, you know, 20-something should take away from everything we're hearing here today. We're trying to figure out what kind of commitment they want to make or what they're looking for in terms of duration.
Well, I think that they should look for a marriage to last, of course, but they also need to be very careful. Your last caller, I think, just hit the nail on the head. That friendship is so important. Mm-hmm. You know, people say love is enough. Love is all you need, that old Beatles song. Mm-hmm. No, it's not all you need. You need mutual respect. You need shared interests and values. And if they're different, but they can overlap the way your last caller explained, that's wonderful too, because then you're each bringing something new to the other one. You need to really be interested in each other as people, and you need to be committed to either joint work, whether that's in church or environmental causes or politics, and joint play.
Work and play and a lot more we've heard in this hour. Stephanie Kuntz, look for her forthcoming book, is Strange, Stirring. And Stephanie, thank you so much for being with us today. Ilana Katz in New York City, it's great to have you. And Sally Quinn at the Washington Post, we're very grateful to you, Sally. Thanks for joining us. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.
On Point is a production of WBUR Boston and NPR.